Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, .email, part 2 of 2.
This cast answers these questions. How do I manage my email? I've got too much email, help. And how do I save time doing email?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Stuck in your career and not sure what to do? The Career Tools license gives you proven guidance to plan, grow, and succeed in your professional journey. Visit us at manager-tools.com/licenses to learn more about how you can join our community. Next item on our list, then, is using subject lines to inform the reader about message content. Something else that people don't do particularly well is use subject lines effectively. We recommend turning off if you're using an email client that has an auto preview option.
Like, I know show me 3 lines so I can kind of get a sense of what's
Microsoft
in there.
Outlook had that. Can't think of another one that's got it, but if it's got that.
Gmail, you can do it.
Oh, do they? Oh, I didn't know that.
As opposed to just 1 line with just the header and the name.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, well, in any case, we recommend that you turn it off so only the sender and the subject line itself are what is shown. And folks, you can encourage the teams that you're on, your direct reports, maybe not your boss, but your peers anyway, to use a little bit of discipline when they send emails. Mark mentioned this earlier, asking folks if you could put IT project or whatever you mentioned in the subject line. That would be super helpful. Ask folks not to send an email with just a blank subject line. Now, thankfully, again, many email clients send an alert to the sender, preventing them from doing so, which helps. But yeah, using your subject lines more effectively can also help.
Yeah. Sometimes when there's a long conversation about a particular topic, the subject changes. It used to be about the IT project, and then it became some subtopic, and then some completely different topic. So when that happens, you've got to recognize it and go ahead and change the subject line so people recognize that the topic of this mail has changed. If somebody else doesn't do it, you do it for the rest of the people who are on this email exchange.
And you can develop a habit, even again, if you're a manager in your organization, of using helpful acronyms to indicate the type of response your message requires. So if there's an AR in the subject line, it means action required. Put it at the start of the subject line to indicate that there is action required. Interestingly enough, of course, you can make a rule that says if I get an email from anybody that knows I want AR in the subject line and it's action required, it gets sent to a folder or a file called AR. And then again, it's one of those folders that you prioritize in terms of your review of your email because there are actions associated.
However, don't expect your boss to put AR on stuff she sends
Good
you.
Good one.
That's why there's a boss folder. Also, like MSR, monthly status report. You can set up your client so that it goes into a folder called monthly status report, or you could tell people, hey, look, for this monthly status report, put it in the subject line, MSR. If getting something monthly from a boss or a peer or subordinate, but it doesn't require an action, then put it in MSR or quarterly reports, QR, same thing.
One that I particularly like, and you know, now that I think of it, it might be because I'm a high D, is do not respond, DNR. So the meeting is canceled today, DNR. And that's the subject line.
Yeah, that's the entire mail.
Everything about this, exactly. There's nothing written here. You don't need to respond to this.
You don't have to say thank you.
Yeah, please don't, in fact, say thank you. You don't even need to type.
I sent this to 20 people. I don't need 18 people saying, hey, thanks for letting me know.
Yeah.
I just have to delete those. Bah.
Yeah, you got my mail. Point taken. Trash this message. You're too busy to type. I'm too busy to read your thank you. I have other work to do. Thank you very much. Do not respond.
DNR. Yeah, which is funny. DNR means do not respond.
I know. It does, but it works.
Also, you have a subject line. And then at the end of the subject line, you put EOM, Echo, Oscar, Mike, which means end of message.
I literally use this one today.
Yeah, there's nothing in the body of the mail. I've told you what you need to know in the subject line. Now that you know it, you can just delete that message.
Absolutely. And then using an email client. for all email accounts. Now, we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the cast, but if you've got multiple email accounts, you may want to consider getting an intermediary email client to grab all the messages from those accounts. What is the one you said you used, Mark? Apple Mail?
Yeah, I used Apple Mail for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had my primary email address, and then I had my Reacher email address, M.A. Horstmann. Then I also had M.A. Horstmann 2. I had M.A. Horstmann 6 for different stuff. And then I thought I had a personal one. I haven't had a personal email address since we started Manager Tools. I'm not even sure we had one at my old company because most people know me from work.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you own the company. So, I mean, I feel like even if we fired you, we'd let you keep your email address.
Yeah, you probably would.
Probably. Now, folks, again, these intermediary mail clients prevent you having to go to multiple sites to go get your mail. You can use the client to aggregate all of those mails. And then you only have to set up all of those rules one time, as opposed to having to set up those same series of rules and the same series of folder in all of your mail clients, because holy headache. And in terms of the flow of messages, sometimes intermediary clients can give you more options. They're more specialized functions. It allows you to do more particular sorting and things like that. Might be helpful if you don't particularly like your native client.
Another thing we recommend you do relative to efficiency is use the signature feature. So Mail has the ability to sign your mails, and you include your name, probably your title, your phone number. If you're at a corporate headquarters, you may want to put where you are, 7th floor West Wing or something like that. You don't need to include your email address, right? But include your phone number to make it easy for somebody to call you. I love it when a conversation moves from mail after a couple of back and forth emails to a phone call. And if you can do face-to-face, time-wise, urgency-wise, medium-wise, you should whenever possible. If you can do voicemail before email, you generally should, particularly on matters that are sensitive or urgent. And then ultimately, mail is your last resort because it's the worst form of communication.
Yeah, we say again in a podcast all about email. Okay, so that is essentially the part of the podcast where we're laying down the groundwork in order to facilitate what now is the change to your behavior regarding email and decreasing the time you spend doing it. This part of the cast is the really important stuff. This is the fundamental behavioral change about how you'll deal with your email now that your email is functioning in a more effective way to support you and your business process.
Yeah. And what we're telling you folks is only do email 3 times a day. Now you're saying, I can't do that. I just can't do it. I'm constantly grazing on my email throughout the day. And that's your problem. That's a behavior you've learned. It's the wrong behavior and it's incredibly inefficient. Look, CEOs and EVPs today, in many cases, started their career and they didn't have email. They got by without it. They ran billion-dollar divisions without it. What do senior people do? They essentially corral their email into 2 or 3 times a day, particularly CEOs. They're not checking email throughout the day. You might hear a story of a Silicon Valley CEO who's constantly checking his or her email. Great. You're not a Silicon Valley CEO. They started their career, they're 30 years old or 35 or 40 years old, and they have had email all of their professional life. But the fact is, for the rest of us, you have got to corral your email. And so we recommend doing it only 3 times a day. Even if you have an email culture at your company, the fact is, people say that all the time, and it's probably a technical company or technology company where people like writing rather than talking because they're not comfortable with face-to-face conversations or phone conversations. They don't feel they're particularly good verbally. And so they want to be able to draft and then write something and so on. And of course, the problem with email is you don't get any feedback as you're preparing it. You may think you're better at what you're sending, but in fact, it's taking you longer. And sometimes the feedback you get in a conversation when somebody cuts you off, and says, you don't have to tell anything more. I know the answer. The answer is 6. You don't have to send me 2 more paragraphs of what you were saying in order to get to my answer. So 3 times a day.
Yeah. And folks, functionally, what this means for you is check email first thing. For the urgent stuff, like the stuff from your boss, not 100% of the folders. You're not looking in each and every one of them. It's the morning. You're looking for stuff from overnight, things that have come in, things that you should be aware of as you proceed through the morning's activities. So schedule 30 minutes of your morning time to look in on your email.
When you say schedule, you mean like an item on my calendar, right?
Yes. I mean a 30-minute block of time scheduled on your calendar, do email.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, good. That's exactly what I mean. I don't know. I'm sure that other people listening to this cast are like me. If it's not on your calendar, you're not going to do it. And if you keep it penned in, if you will, to a 30-minute time block, you're more likely to stick to your 30-minute time block instead of spending an excessive amount of time on this activity. And then, folks, don't do email again until the middle of the day. And then, once again, at the end of the day. So, from about 9 a.m. to 11:30, and again from 1 till about 5, you're not looking at your email.
Right.
You're not even opening your email client. You don't need to. You've turned off all your reminders. So you will not be visually alerted or reminded at all to check email. You might have to fight that voice inside your head that makes you want to look at email.
They're addicted. So there's going to be a, what do you call it when somebody's coming off an addiction? There'll be a hangover.
Oh my gosh. Hangover, hangover. Yeah. It's like a withdrawal.
Yeah, withdrawal. And you need to go to rehab.
Yeah. And this is rehab, friends.
So what Sarah is saying here, folks, is that you're going to do email roughly first thing in the morning, and you're going to go through all of it and process all of that email. You're not going to do the tasks. You're not going to see an email that requires a task unless it's from your boss and he says it's urgent, she says it's urgent. You're not going to do that task. You're going to capture that task, and you're going to go through your entire mailbox and go to inbox zero. And then you don't have any mail. And in fact, what I tell people, Sarah, it may be a future item, which is you then tell your mail client, don't ping the server again. That way, if you inadvertently, while you're going through withdrawals, look for email, you'll find that you have no new email. Oh, trust me, you have email, but you're just conveniently leaving it on the server so you can still control your attention and your productivity. And then when it comes time, you know, 11:30-ish or 11:45, whenever you've got that middle of the day slot for email, you push the button to get the server and you get 50 more emails or 75 more emails. And then you manage them like a demon. You go through them like an assassin rather than saying, well, I'll leave that. I'll mark that unread. I'll think about that and so on. You capture all the deliverables and you move on. Look, email's a tool. It's not an addiction. If you're constantly in email, it's your fault. Okay. I know you're not constantly in email when you're sleeping. You're not constantly in email if you're halfway intelligent when you're watching a Disney movie with your kids. You're not doing email on your laptop when you're eating breakfast with your family or having Friday night dinner or Saturday night dinner, or you're at church on Sunday, or you're doing a family outing while you're driving. You're not doing that. It's not an addiction. It's not a distraction unless you let it become that through your behavior. When you're talking to another person face-to-face, email ought not to get in the way. As a matter of just human courtesy, you don't have to be a professional to follow that rule. The way to handle your email is to stop doing it all day. If you do that and don't do any other technology stuff, you'll be so much more effective. And by the way, you can kind of lump Slack and Teams in this too, but not completely, because Slack and Teams are a little bit more urgent than email by definition. By doing this, a la our first example of me coaching a manager that was losing control of her team because she was too distracted, you're going to have a better relationship with your team. You'll have a better relationship with your boss too, and your peers. The change in your life because of email will become a positive rather than negative. And you'll discover, you'll look around and you'll realize everybody else is always in email. They're constantly being distracted. They miss opportunities coming out of a meeting to talk to somebody about how their weekend was, or, hey, how did your son's wedding go? Something like that. But if you're walking from place to place, always checking your mail and just saying hey to people as you walk by, you're missing an opportunity for human connection. And if you're missing that, you're losing the opportunity to build trust with that person. And then when you need to try to persuade them, convince them, or even better, persuade them to do something, you're not going to be able to do it. And if you're doing email all day and you have low trust and you start talking to them and they check their email while they're talking to you, you're getting what you deserve there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So folks, if there's only one lesson that you take away from this cast, you just heard it. Start doing your email 3 times a day. That is the big lesson. Now, we'd be remiss if not to at least acknowledge the fact that there could be downsides to this approach. Sure. Yeah, there's a possibility that a fire could erupt and you won't be able to manage the email flow. And we would argue that if it's a really big fire, you're going to hear about it. Like I mentioned earlier, someone's going to call you and say, hey, I don't know if you saw this, but emails are flying around about something you're involved in. And I would have thought you would have chimed in by now, in which case you're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for the heads up. And then you can go and then you can wrangle that situation. But again, folks, that would be an exception, not the norm, and a risk we're willing to take for the benefits of you having more focused time to work on what's important as opposed to being drugged into your email constantly.
Yeah. And look, by the way, part of the reason email is an addiction is because it happens fairly randomly. And what happens is you start doing it all the time and it feels good to be getting rid of emails to say, oh, I can ignore that one. I'll delete that one. Okay, I can send a quick response to this one and so on. And it feels good, but you're essentially handling C-level priorities and your A and B priorities are going lacking for your attention and your productivity. This next one we're going to tell you is probably going to drive you absolutely crazy.
Well, the first one drove them nuts.
Yeah, but we'll just double down on
it. You're just going to double down on it. Yeah. I like it.
You don't need to take your phone to meetings. Or if you're going to take it, because everybody's fetishized their phone to the point where they don't go anywhere without it, it's always wallet, keys, and phone. By the way, it only used to be wallet and keys before phones, and then it became wallet, keys, and phones. And there are some people, heck, we can get into our car with just our phone. So we don't need keys. And nowadays, even really need a wallet unless you're traveling and you have to have an ID, right? You can pay with your phone.
I mean, I'm waiting for them to like insert like a some sort of RFID chip that's the size of a grain of rice into my hand so that I can just pay that way from here on.
It's coming. It's absolutely coming.
I hope so.
I'm sure it'll have AI in it too.
I'm sure that it will. I'm gonna not be in the trial group.
Yeah. So look, folks, stop thinking that you're the only one who knows how to put your phone below the desk and send emails back and forth. Everybody knows that, okay? Everybody knows you're doing it. It's rude. I'm amazed at the number of people on Zoom and team calls that I'm talking to a person, even a small group, and I can tell by looking at their faces who's distracted and who's not. They're looking in the direction of the screen, but their eyes are darting this way and that. And you notice their shoulders tensing up because they're trying to type without being seen.
Mm-hmm. Or we can see the reflection in your glasses.
Yeah, gosh. So look, it's unprofessional. If you're a boss and you're doing it while your team is in a meeting with you, you know what they think? They don't think you're important. They think you're rude and you don't care about them. They don't appreciate it. And then you say, no, I'm listening. Like the child whose phone I had to take away. And you look up. Or your head comes up, but your eyes are still on the screen. It's just unprofessional, folks. And you're depriving yourself and your teams from the opportunity to build trust by giving them your attention, which leads to higher productivity.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you mapped out your personal growth for the next year? Manager Tools makes it easy with in-person and virtual conferences that teach actionable management and leadership skills. Start planning today and make 2026 your most successful year yet. Visit us at manager-tools.com/training for more details. Then that takes us to the last little bit of our guidance today. That is keeping your messages short. If it's more than 3 or 4 paragraphs, folks, it's a conversation and it needs to happen using your voice. And each of those paragraphs, to be clear, because I don't want you guys splitting hairs here, shouldn't be more than two or three sentences long. Long paragraphs, five, six, seven, eight sentences, don't get read by the vast majority of executives we know. And doesn't even have to be executives. I mean, I stopped reading past the first sentence.
Yeah.
When I was a manager. Like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. And speaking about things that don't get read, we know there are plenty of IT people and finance people who are shocked to hear this, but attachments don't get read either. Okay. So if you're sending attachments, assuming people will read them, and then you get irritated in the meeting when they don't, it's your fault. Yeah, there's a reason for attachments, but you thinking that you can send your peers a couple of attachments and that you think you're authorized to task them to read them before the meeting, you better have a lot of trust, right? I generally think that attachments get read when they are sent downwards in the organization, but not upwards and not sideways.
That sounds right. Actually, Mark, I can remember, oh, this was years ago now. It's got to be 2019. It was before the pandemic. I was at Heineken and I was teaching our effective communicator conference. And there was a gentleman sitting in the front row, cannot remember his name, but I can remember his face. And he was listening to what I said. He was a high C, right?
Yeah.
Detail focused or detail oriented, task focused. And he came back from one of the breaks and because he'd been writing a message, apparently, to one of his leaders in the organization over and over. And he came back at the end of the break and he said, "Sarah, it worked. I've been trying to get an answer for 4 weeks to a question that I had."
An email. Yeah.
And on the break, I went back and I just typed a one sentence, the question by itself, and I sent the email. And before I returned from this break, I got the answer I've been waiting weeks to hear.
Oh my gosh. It was probably to me.
He might have been to you. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, because he'd been sending really, really long emails with all of this information that he thought everyone needed to answer the question. But when he just only sent the question, he got his email immediately. And that's the crux of it, folks. Communication is what the listener does. Mark mentioned this earlier. Just because you send a novel complete with multiple appendices attached does not mean it's being or should be expected to be read. If you send a big attachment, I mean, at the very least you could do is help somebody out and say, "Hey, I've sent an attachment. Look at page 2 and page 9. Those are the key parts. Highlight things in red, maybe, to make them more clear or obvious to encourage maybe people open up your attachment and look at it." But folks, don't make us work to read your email.
I'll say it this way. If you think the amount of email you have is the problem, you're wrong. The problem is your behavior in dealing with your email. I know people who get hundreds of emails a day. I did until I retired 3 years ago. I used to get hundreds of email a day and I wrangled them into three boxes, you know, morning, midday, and late in the afternoon. And I just was an assassin about my email. And I spent the rest of the day feeling light as a feather because I didn't have to look at email. I didn't have to graze through email. And frankly, if it was urgent, somebody was going to call me because I tend to be surrounded with smart people in most cases. The problem is not the volume. The problem is your behavior. And so change your behavior and you can handle almost any volume you need to. So do you want to summarize?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. All right. So folks, of the four choices, face-to-face, virtual calls, voicemail or phone, and email. Email is both the least efficient and least effective method of communication.
And by the way, I just want to say, sorry to interrupt, sir. Yeah. There are a bunch of you who are saying, "I like email." Folks, we're telling you that's not effective, okay? You don't get paid to do what you like. You get paid to do what's effective. And I know you high C's out there are like, "Well, we and my technical friends and I invented the internet so we could put email on it." In fact, the first real killer app on the internet was email between the original parts of the DARPANET, which is a whole bunch of scientists communicating with one another by email. And it's way easier for many people in the world, naturally more comfortable to send a mail because you don't have to talk to someone. You don't have to interact with someone. You can just send your part and they can think and send a response back. But that's not how the vast majority of human interactions work. And it's certainly not how the vast majority of effective, trust-building human interactions work.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you've got a choice, and you can, you should meet somebody face-to-face. That is the best way of communicating.
The default.
The default,
yep,
exactly.
That's what you start with.
Yeah. And people will appreciate it. If you can't do face-to-face, then call them, either on the phone or virtually. There are some people who prefer email, and sure, for those people, send an email. But don't kid yourself into thinking that you're developing great relationships via email. It doesn't work. Human beings need face-to-face connections in order to build trusting relationships. And if you're a manager, good management is about trust and communication. And the richer the form of communication, the better. Thus, face-to-face, followed by virtual calls, phone, or voicemail, and lastly, email is the way to go.
It's easier, but it's not better.
That's the thing. It's not better. So if you got a choice, I mean, get up from your desk, walk over to that person's desk, sit down across from them, hope that they've also turned off their reminders and their glowing icons, and ask for 5 minutes of their time. Ask them how their family's doing. Talk about what you need and ask them to help you out. That is so much more powerful than any email will ever do. And you know what? If the CEOs of billion-dollar companies can do it, something tells us that you can too.
Absolutely. Gosh, it's been a long time since I recorded this.
I know, it was a good one.
Almost exactly 20 years that we recorded.
Happy anniversary.
That.
It was September, so it was 20 years and a month.
Yeah. We have a lot more guidance about email. In fact, we have a podcast called Email Compendium that is much longer, that covers this and a bunch of other guidance as well. It's a necessary evil, so you need to learn how to use it and use it effectively. But the key to it is it's not about volume. It's about behavior.
Thanks so much for joining us, folks. We hope this helped you. Now help us help others and tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.
Thanks, Sarah.
Bye, Mark.